Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation, part two of my response to Preston Becker. And so he starts this section by saying, all my big-brained viewers will guess where this is going. So the real subject is that Veritasium is basically saying that all exchanges of electrical potential are through the process of induction, that a field of force somehow does the transfer of the electrical potential. And it's frankly just stupid. So yeah, it's a tiny part of what happens in electronics. It's a significant part, but it's small compared to the bulk of what happens with electricity, which is the conductors carry it. Like even lightning bolts are being carried by a conductor, the atmosphere. But anyway, let's play along.
But before jumping into the jackpot, let's dig into this energy storage concept a little deeper. Let us again pretend that...
Make sure I have volume appropriate. Seems good enough. All right, so... storage is sort of a trick word, right? It's a trap, but you can call it storage. It's better than nothing. All right, it's better than saying potential. It's not really potential, it is storage. So that's probably a better word, frankly. Good.
These magnets are all positively charged particles, and that this particle has a charge of 1 coulomb. When we release the particle, it flies off with some amount of kinetic energy. Let's say two joules worth.
It would really be better if you just said it flies away with a certain amount of momentum, because there is no such thing as kinetic energy, okay? But whatever. Let's play along. So it flew off. I'd like to be able to say, oh, okay, let's freeze frame this and see how fast it was actually going and see if it has anything to do with kinetic energy.
Let's try the same thing, but this time we double the number of particles in our stack, meaning it has 2 coulombs of charge. Now what if
it also has twice the mass? So it's twice the mass and twice the charge. So that's going to decide how much potential it has to move. So it's going to move at the same speed because it's, frankly, twice the mass.
Flies off. It leaves with 4 joules of kinetic energy. And when we try the...
You can say so, but I don't know if you prove so. So let's see how to calculate this. He's just using the kinetic energy formula and telling us what that predicts. But it doesn't really fly off with twice as much energy.
The experiment with a 3 coulomb particle, it flies off with 6 joules of energy.
All right, so that looked exactly the same as the 4. I mean, the second one did look a little faster than the first one, but no way that was 6 and the last one was 4. No frickin' way. So it's just, he's just telling us that's what kinetic energy says. It's not what energy, what kinetic energy theory proves. There's no increase in the velocity because he's also increasing the mass.
Through these experiments, we have discovered a property of the electric field created by these stationary particles. Any charged object released from this location will gain an amount of kinetic energy equal to twice the object's electric charge.
So that's only if the charge stayed the same. I mean, the weight, the mass stayed the same and you doubled the charge. So that's only true if you don't change the mass of the charge. So in the case of the magnet, it's not true. So this is a nice analogy. I like that you're using magnets to represent charge, but clearly this is where you're combining the kinetic energy theory, okay, into the electrical theory. And I'm going to argue it's all absolute made up crap, and there is no physical real evidence of this expansion of energy through expansion of velocity. Momentum is all there is in the universe. It's all that ever was, it's all that ever is, it's all you'll ever find evidence of is momentum. Momentum is the quantity conserved, momentum is the quantity that defines something's energy. Be a nice subject. Look into the history. You'll see it's just a religious concept. That's all. There was never any good evidence. And levers prove it's impossible.
Phrased another way, at this location, the electric field has an electric potential, or a voltage, of 2 volts. And since it is usually more important to know the amount of energy that can be extracted from an electric field, as opposed to knowing the strength of the electric field itself, Electric potential is the quantity we are usually interested in when working with electrical systems.
So, but that's voltage. So, but it's really, obviously, voltage is only part of the story. So you can have somebody pushing on your door that weighs 100 pounds, and they push on your door. Or you can have somebody who weighs 300 pounds push on your door. You can increase the pressure, or you can have three people weighing 100 pounds each pushing on your door or sitting on you. So it depends on how you configure it. You can configure it by affecting more objects and causing them to have momentum, or you can have one object that has all the momentum.
Electric potential can also be used to calculate changes in kinetic energy when moving between different fields.
So that's the whole reason why I would say. That's why you can put a lot of high voltage through a wire, and you can get a lot of watts through the wire by having a high voltage. And the lower the voltage, then the higher the amps, which means you're using more of the atoms. So you're disturbing more atoms, and you're going to burn up your conductor. So if you want to use fewer atoms, use a higher voltage. You want to use more atoms to create a magnetic field, then you use a lower voltage.
For example, let's say that a 2 Coulomb particle starts in an area with a potential of 5 volts and then moves to a location where the potential is 2 volts.
So the only difference is it always is higher to lower. So that's all that matters. There's no 2 volts. There's no minus 2 volts. All of that's arbitrary, where you just find where you can have a ground that's anywhere. Okay, so where you establish a ground and say everything below this number is a negative and everything above the number is a positive. Well, it's arbitrary.
To find the change in the particle's kinetic energy, you take the difference between the starting voltage and the final voltage, and then multiply that by the particle's charge. In our example, we see that the particle has gained 6 joules of kinetic energy during its move.
Right, but this is never explicitly measured by any device that can measure any of this stuff explicitly, so again, this is all just a statement. It's not a proven fact.
This equation can also be used when dealing with negative voltages, such as when moving to a region with a potential of negative 3 volts. In this case, the particle gained 16 joules of kinetic energy.
Right, because you're just saying 5 minus 3 is 8, so, is the total difference. But again, you could have just said minus 3 is ground, so then it's 8 volts here. So it just depends on where you arbitrarily establish the zero. And it's an arbitrary number, because you're really just saying what's the percentage of electrons to protons. And you can have all protons, or you can have all electrons. And somewhere in between is where you're saying it's zero.
Negatively charged particles work just as well with this equation. If you have an electron that flies away from a region where the potential is negative 8 volts, then by plugging in the charge carried by a single electron, you can find that it will have picked up 12 times 10 to the negative 19 joules of kinetic energy.
So again, it says U based on formulas never proven, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter it just matters that it's garbage in, garbage out, good in, good out. So I could use momentum and establish the ratios and the comparisons. And all of the comparisons would still have merit. So it's, but I would argue that clearly some of your numbers are going to end up being lies. Okay, so you'll end up with numbers based on your velocity that you'll never be able to actually collect any of that energy, because it's not real. It's exaggerated.
So since using exponents is for suckers, when engineers are late for the bar on a Friday night, they just call that 8 electron volts of kinetic energy and wrap it up early for the week.
They all just take shorthand and call it something, but again, what is the truth? And I'd tell you that measuring in kinetic energy joules, okay, mv squared, 1/2 mv squared joules, you'll not get right answers.
To understand voltage, we can explain what happens to a wire when it is hooked up to a power source. When I touch this wire to the negative side of
Now we're finally to the part relevant to the Veritasium video. So what happens to the wire? So he connects the negative end of the battery to a piece of wire. So whatever the potential of the negative end of the battery is now going to be the potential of the wire. The wire is going to change, all right? And so there's going to be, but it's not going to be, it's not like the change is being complemented on the other side of the wire by the being connected to the positive. So there's not going to be a direct flow, so to speak, of energy at a very high voltage. It's a very low voltage, a low pressure, a low volume. but the wire will acquire the voltage, but it does it very slowly, so you're not going to get any induction. You're not going to get much of anything out of it. It's not going to produce much of an effect.
A 5-volt battery, the surface of the wire will gain an electric potential of negative 5 volts. And since we have learned that electric potential is a result of electric fields, that must mean that excess electrons are flowing into the wire.
See, if their capacitor-type analogy was real, then this would be the charging of a capacitor. You're charging the plate, so to speak. But it clearly isn't a plate. It clearly doesn't have an infinite plane kind of effect, so it doesn't have any inductive power, because the flow is going to be too... The change in the potential in the wire is going to take place too slowly for it to be capable of doing the thing of pushing force at the world. It's pushing it so slowly that it's not going to notice. The world's not going to notice.
Giving it a negative electric charge. But as you've probably noticed, the wires in our house don't start flying wildly around when we plug them into things. So these electric fields must be pretty weak. And indeed, they are.
And they're relative to each other weak. So even when you have it connected to the other side of the battery, it's still a very tiny amount of current, and it's a very small capacity to signal to another wire. But it's even smaller when it's not connected to the other side of the wire, so the electrical potential really doesn't have anywhere to go. The electrons push in, they all pressurize, and they just stay in that state.
For example, if I were to take two 8-millimeter diameter and half-meter long wires, place them 5 centimeters apart from each other, and then charge them both to negative 5 volts, we would expect somewhere around 200 million electrons to flow into each wire. The excess electrons in these wires would then push against each other, but with a force of only 5 times 10 to the negative 10 newtons, which is 10,000 times less than the weight of a human hair.
Right, so I don't know about the 5 million or whatever you said, electrons, what equation gives them in that answer going into the wire. So, you know, I don't necessarily believe that's the number, but whatever.
You would have to go to some crazy extremes if you wanted to see the electrostatic force in your wires.
Right, the induction from one wire to the other wire. So are the two wires communicating magnetically, essentially? The magnetic field is going to be so slight, they will not repel and move from away from each other. So unless you push a bunch of current through them, they're not going to do much. I don't know why these are negatively charged in different holes on his bus. That's a little strange, but whatever. Why aren't they in the same hole? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what would the difference be? Again, if they're not going to be connected at the other end, I really don't think you're going to get any inductive effect. So it wouldn't matter whether you have this one plugged into this negative, whatever this one negative is, and this negative. I mean, why, you know, negative is negative. If it's the same negative 5 volts, frankly, I don't think they're going to be able to do anything from the same source.
Such as this gentleman who charged his wires up to 10,000 volts and was then just barely able to deflect a piece of aluminum foil.
All right. So, so obviously 10,000 volts is a very high pressure. So, you know, that's a big difference. So you're talking about something very low pressure versus very high pressure, and whether one's detectable over the other one, because it's going to happen fast, and that's the part you need it to do. The problem with the high voltage is that it's low amperage, so you have to have a high amperage to go with the high voltage, or you're not going to create much of a magnetic effect.
At this point, we are very close to being able to explain the physics behind basic circuits.
So this is, you know, this is all kind of talk. Well, I'm going to explain it even though you really haven't nailed down anything that really happens. In the sense, you really don't have an explanation for what an electron is secreting or what it's absorbing. You don't really don't have any explanation for what these fields are. What's the distinction between the magnetic field and the electric field? How are they interacting? You don't have any of that. And yet you're going to explain it. Well, you know. I don't think you're going to explain it with if you don't have any of these physical details about how it actually physically functions. And I don't think you have a theory for that.
But before we do, there is one final question to answer. If voltage is the result of excess electrons, and if voltage moves along a wire close to the speed of light, does that mean that the electrons from the battery are also moving close to the speed of light?
Right. So this is the simple, easy one to answer, in the sense is that no, you're really, and the electrons are really far from each other. So this is a point, I suppose, where I can draw, because this is the part that gets into whole drift velocity, which is, again, just mathematical mush. It doesn't have anything to do with anything really happening. And that's not what I wanted. I want to do this, and I want to do that. All right. So so the idea is that what's really being transferred is force, okay, because something moves. And so you're transferring this collection. When an electron moves in space, it collects energy, consolidates it. So if the energy was this dense, you know, this far apart from each other, if the electron moves into it, then this, as it gets reflected, say if it doesn't move, this reflects just the way it came in. So the way it came in is the way it comes out. But if this thing moves, then the way it came in is this spacing, and the way it comes out, okay, will be a much tighter spacing. It'll be blue shifted, essentially. This moves towards, it blue shifts the energy, it consolidates it into a smaller clump. Okay, and now that can be next to a bigger clump, you know, and then it can be another small clump. And so you're creating your signal now. You're creating information, okay, about what took place here. And that information will hit something else. It's the signal, the Morse code you're sending of compression, relaxation, or what's the word people use? It's just annoying. So anyway, when this is happening between the electrons, though, so when the electrons are pushing, and they're pushing into the pressure, that is, they're increasing the pressure when they push, they get closer to another electron, that increases the pressure milliseconds later. Milliseconds after this electron moves, this pressure starts to increase, because at the speed of light, this is a reflection. The trick is the electrons are zillions of miles away from each other. So by comparison to, say, the size of the electron, the space between the electrons is gigantic. So it's like East Coast, West Coast, you know, of America or something, you know, and you're a person. So if you move 2 feet as a person really slow, but you transfer your movement, the signal, at the speed of light, and then the other person moves 2 feet on the other side, it's a tiny percentage of the journey, okay, that's being at the slow speed of the human being, and 99.99999999% of the journey is happening at the speed of light. So the information does slow down because of the slow electrons, the people, but the message, okay, is traveling fast because the bulk of the journey happens at the speed of light, and we a tiny percentage of the journey happens at the slow speed of the electron. So this speed is slow, but the speed that you saw me do that is very fast. And if you just understand that the distances are miles, okay, I mean, I move a foot, the signal goes miles, all right? So most of the journey is happening at the speed of light. So that's why the electricity travels at almost the speed of light, is because the part where the electron is moving is tiny, and the distance over which it's transferring that information of its movement is gigantic. So the distance between the electrons is huge. You can understand even inside of an atom, and the distance between electrons of different atoms is even bigger. So, you know, it's a huge amount of difference. But the fact is if you really figure it out, electrons end up being proportionally distant. So that decides where the atoms are going to be positioned. It's essentially decided by the fact that the electrons end up kind of equalizing their pressure between everybody. So that's what makes solids solid, is the fact that the electrons equidistant. They're forced to become equidistant because they all hate each other. I think that's enough of that.
Answer that. Let's perform another experiment with some magnets. Here we have 8 magnets.
So again, I love this comparison. This should be the analogy always used for electrons throwing through a wire should always be monopoles, negative monopoles, right? You're just saying that I've got all the magnets in the same orientation, they're repelling each other. All I'm going to do is now in three dimensions introduce another magnet, and all of the other magnets are going to have to proportionally react to the fact that I've created a new source of pressure. I'm occupying the space the force would occupy. I'm reflecting it. The reflections are going to be felt by all of the other paddles that have ping pong balls between them. So if I had three ping pong paddles and I increase the pressure over here by moving this one's going to react, because as I put more pressure on the one in the middle, it moves closer to this one. It creates more pressure banging back and forth here. And the pressure will just migrate back and forth between those paddles. That's the analogy. The physical reality is these little magnets are little electrons, and they're attracted to protons, so they can't fly away because they want to go to the they're less pressure they feel towards the proton. So they're attracted to the proton, and they're repelled by the other electrons, and they're going to find a balance between that attraction and that repulsion, and they're always just going to find a position that balances those two forces.
Magnets representing 8 electrons inside of a copper wire. Sitting next to them are 8 protons, giving the wire an overall neutral charge. I then push an extra electron in the...
Well, see, the protons aren't the key. The neutrons are, too. And the neutrons are an electron and a proton. So really what you have is, you know, you have 2 electrons and 2 protons, you know, in reality, making your atomic structure.
Wire, making the wire electrically negative. Notice, however, that when I add the extra electron, the other electrons rearrange themselves so as to maintain a constant spacing. Therefore, while I only moved the first electron an inch or so, the negative electric field extends uniformly throughout the whole wire, meaning that the speed of...
Right, so, and if we increase this distance, if we imagine that these are actual electrons, and the actual electrons are many, you know, miles of real space between them, you know, the size difference is huge, so the distance between them is gigantic. So you can understand that it's a tiny bit of the journey is the magnets moving. So imagine more space between the magnets, like miles, or imagine these being so infinitesimally tiny, and then you'll understand that it's only a tiny bit of the motion that's actually happening, okay, in the object, and that the real signal is just basically being transported at the speed of light through the particles bouncing between the electrons. The ping pong balls are sending the message at the speed of light.
The voltage change must be greater than the speed of any individual electron. How much faster? Looking back at the experiment, we see that the voltage pulse relies on 2 phenomena. First, each individual electron needs to physically move to a new location. And in a typical...
So again, the new location here wouldn't be that they're moving from atom to atom. That's a gigantic distance. So they're really just moving a little tiny distance in their field. So the electron is just jiggling. It's not really moving very far. And that's all you need to increase the pressure in the system, is to create another electron, put a new electron into the system, occupying space, creating a field around it that automatically displaces the space the field had to operate in. So you're displacing empty space with a material bit, and a material bit that's reflective, that is, it's going to add pressure. So you're just increasing the probability of an impact.
Circuit, electrons will move through a wire with a speed of around 1 mm/h.
So that's the drift velocity nonsense. So that they only calculate because they calculate all the horses that are in the race, plus all the horses that are in their stable. And they say, how fast is the average horse going? Well, there's no point in comparing it to the horses in the stable. It's not going that slowly.
Once an electron moves to its new location, the local electric field will then update to reflect this change. And this update...
So this field update, again, it's just that it's radiating heat. You could call it just heat. And the heat moves, in this case, at the speed of light. It gets to the other object. It reflects back the heat, creating more pressure between the objects.
Travels at the speed of light.
Once and everything moves to the lower pressure. So if you create more pressure here, this one has to move to the lower pressure. When it moves to the lower pressure, it creates more pressure ahead of it, which now causes the other magnet to say, I'm going to move to a lower pressure. So they all just move to the lower pressure.
This update reaches the next electron in line. That next electron will then begin to move, continuing the voltage pulse. Therefore, the overall pulse speed will lie some...
He probably was using two magnets because they're less likely to flip. But anyway. All right. So we have the V electron, V voltage, V local field. I don't know exactly. So at least he's pointing out that the field, the energy between the electrons, is moving at the speed of light, very fast, rapidly. The speed of the actual electron, very, very slow. But if you understand that most of the distance is in the form of the force, then you know that, yes, even though the turtle's slowing it down, it's like just a tiny, it's taking a little tiny edge off the rabbit's speed, not much at all. Because it's such a tiny amount of the total journey happens at turtle speed.
Or between the movement speed of the electrons and the update speed of the local field, with the exact mix of the two speeds depending on the distance that each electron needs to travel. The greater the distance traveled by each electron, the slower the overall pulse speed.
So I would argue that higher voltages move at a slightly higher velocity. But again, it's such a small percentage that the only way to measure that would be with very high voltages. You'd have to have relative high differences in two voltages to tell the difference between how fast the voltage moved through the wire. Because it's still such a tiny percentage of the total journey the voltage is taking.
Now, we said earlier that we would be pumping almost a billion electrons into this wire to get it to -5 volt.
Yeah, see, you can say that, but I don't, whatever. I don't know what theory gives you that information, but whatever.
With that many electrons being added, you would think that they would have to travel pretty far along the wire before they became evenly spaced. However, before we even add the electrons to the wire, there are already 10 to the 24 valence electrons inside the wire.
So valence electrons is another way of saying electrons that are part of atoms. I mean, they're stuck, okay, but they're, they can move. Now, whether they can move freely, so there's no such thing, in my opinion, as a free electron, because there's no such thing as a perfectly balanced field on either side of anything in terms of its charge. There's always going to be more charge one way than there is the other way. So electrons are always going to be compelled to move one way or another until they get to inside an atom where they have a balance between the proton force and the opposition to the other electrons. And all of the atoms from a distance look positive, because the electrons are so tiny. And so when you get close to an electron, does it get big? Just like this analogy. You can't wipe, I can wipe you out if I put the electron close to you. But if the electron's close to me, okay, and you're further away, then you're going to see me. I'm the proton. So from a distance, all the atoms look positive to electrons. But it's only when they get close they realize, oh, this field's going to turn purple on me. It's looking red from a distance. As I get closer, it gets bluer and bluer as the electrons get more and more significant.
Sitting next to an equal number of protons, that's 1,000 trillion valence electrons for every new electron from the battery. So, when the electrons do flow in from the battery, they only need to move a negligibly small distance to achieve a uniform spacing. This is also true for the wire attached to the positive terminal of the battery, where so few electrons are pulled out of the wire that the remaining electrons also barely need to move.
So, this logic of trillions making it barely need to move argument I still don't quite get, but this image would be good for pointing out the difference between voltage and amperage, in the sense that I can have a very high pressure electron, an electron that's moving fast, it moves the pressure in quickly, and only a few of these electrons will have to be disturbed for the pressure to keep moving. Okay, it doesn't spread. So the faster it's going, the more the pressure stays ahead of it. It doesn't diverge. So it's only when it's going, it's sort of like sound, the speed of sound, the sound doesn't diverge when you go the speed of sound. But if you go some lower speed, it spreads a lot more and you lose all the energy. So the energy stays in a straight line at a higher voltage, and the lower the voltage, the more the line spreads and the path can become jiggly. Okay. So to create magnetism, what you basically want to do is polarize as many of these atoms as possible. That is, get them all to point the same direction. And so basically you have to involve them all. And the way to involve them is to have a slow voltage spreading a lot that'll involve lots of atoms at a high amperage. That is, you're sending in a lot of electrons at a low voltage and low pressure rather than sending in one electron at a very high pressure. So the high pressure moves through a very few atoms, the low pressure moves through a lot of atoms.
And since each electron travels such a small distance, the main bottleneck is actually the time spent waiting for the local field to update between each electron, meaning that the voltage pulse will travel down the wire at somewhere between 60 to 99% of the speed of light.
So that's a big range, 60 to 99%, right? And I would say that 99% is for a high voltage, the 60% is for a low voltage. Low voltage, low amperage, and also depends on the quality of the conductor. So the better the conductor, the faster the rate of transmission, because fewer of the transmissions are getting sidetracked by hitting dirt in the conductor or some other obstacle that makes it go sideways. And so the more this motion you have as the energy is going forward, the more zigzag it's doing, the slower it's going to be. The less zigzag it's doing, the faster it's going to be.
Depending on the type of wire that you use. Therefore, when I connect a wire to a battery, the movement of electrons will actually look like this. And with that last explanation out of the...
I don't know why I said it looked like this when it's the speed of light, so it'll look like something we can't photograph because it's going to happen so fast.
Way, we now know enough physics to explain the workings of a basic circuit.
Well, not really, because you didn't even get into the fact that the wire, once you've charged it, is now reflecting the universe a little different than before it was charged. And the process of charging, the process of adding pressure, which means you probably made the wire get fatter, you could think of it that way. The wire got fatter when you charged it. It pushed extra energy into the universe in the sense it contracted the space between another wire sitting here and you. You contract the space, that is, you compress the density of the force between the two things. This thing feels that compression, and it ends up getting compressed. It ends up having a higher pressure. So it ends up sympathetically turning into the very voltage that you had over here. But it's a very small amount compared to what you started with.
When we connect a pair of wires to this battery, the battery pulls electrons from the top wire and pushes them to the bottom wire, giving it...
So it doesn't pull anything. So again, that's another... There's only push in the universe. I'll say that again. So by absencing the electrons now see the hole you've created by moving electrons out of their space. They have less space. Now the electrons can be pushed by the environmental pressure in. But they have to be pushed because the environment is already pushing. But that's the point. It's all push. You got to go find the push.
Top wire an electric potential of 5 volts, and the bottom wire a potential of negative 5 volts. The resulting electric field exerts a force on any nearby negatively charged object, pushing it away from the bottom wire and towards the top wire.
To me, this is the wrong way to analogize it, but obviously these two wires, you would say, and would end up attracting each other, okay, because they would have opposite going fields, but the fact is that they would repel each other. If you complete this circuit, you end up creating two wires that have opposite fields, but they repel. I mean, they attract rather than repel. Say it the right way. Just make sure. Okay, it's same field, then they're repelling, opposite not. And it's just the opposite. Induction creates the opposite. So this will try to make this negative, and this will try to make this positive. That's what induction will try to do. This high pressure is hitting this low pressure and pressurizing it, all right? But that's not going to help it any. Well, I guess the bottom has the high pressure and the red has the low pressure, but anyway.
If an electron were to escape from...
It's easier to explain when you don't have voltage in both wires, because then the induction is essentially eaten up by both of them. Neither one of them can manifest any induction effects because they're both doing the inverse thing to each other.
The bottom wire, it would also feel these forces, and would therefore accelerate to the top wire, gaining 10 electron volts of kinetic energy along its journey. But since electrons don't normally go jumping off wires, we connect the two sides with a resistor. The resistor gives the electron a path to the top wire, but it also steals the 10 electron volts of kinetic energy that the electron would have gained, releasing it instead as heat.
So what it's really saying is the voltage drops. So the pressure of the water you're putting in is now dropped. So you had a certain amount of pressure here. You've dropped the pressure by putting it through an obstacle that has banged into and lost some of its momentum. So the pressure of the electron is now lower, the speed at which it's jiggling. So you've changed the jiggle speed of the electrons on one side of the resistor versus the other side. And to do that, you're doing work, which means you're moving stuff, and that way you can, you know, create light or heat or some other manifestation of the fact that you're doing work.
If we were to pass 1 amp of electricity through the system, which is equal to 10 to the 19 electrons per second, and if each electron gives off 10 to the negative 18 joules of energy as it moves from low to high voltage, then we would expect the resistor to give off 10 joules per second, or 10 watts, of heat. For those of you wondering, this is where we get that power equals voltage times current.
Right, and these are all just numbers that are only good really for relative comparison, because I'd say they're absolutely wrong, because they are using kinetic energy to define these values, and it's not true, okay? 20 volts isn't 4 times more electricity than 10 volts. It won't do 4 times more work.
Voltage is the energy taken from each electron by the resistor, and current is the number of electrons that go through the resistor every second. And that's how circuits work. For the rest of the video...
So he says you. That's a version. That's your theory. My argument would be that, yes, that's how circuits work, in the sense that you've put in the pressure and the magnets are doing their little tiny movement thing. You're pushing the pressure through, and now you've created an obstacle that doesn't allow that field energy to keep going straight. Instead, it ends up pushing magnets sideways, and they end up hitting walls, moving the walls, and, you know, creating a dynamic where the energy, the pressure, is now getting dissipated because it's being released to the environment. So you've released the pressure, and therefore there isn't as much of it because you release some of it. You're spilling the water, essentially, leaking some of it out, and that's reducing the pressure.
I will be referring to this explanation of electric circuits, the one based on the idea of electric charges moving between areas of different voltages.
But again, this is just convenient. I changed what I used for a test particle, and now the arrows go in and these arrows go out. So again, it's an arbitrary choice to create this idea of motion. There is no things go from here and go into here. There's no field that's doing that. That's what the product will be of the charge. The positive charge will go from here to there. The negative charge will go from here to there. So they're doing completely opposite things. So this diagram really is obviously incomplete, in the sense that I just change what I'm testing with, and I completely change all the directions of the arrows.
As the traditional theory of electricity. And now that you have a good grasp on the traditional theory, you may find yourself thinking that this model strongly resembles a hydraulic circuit. After all, both circuits have some kind of pump that pushes the fluid to a region of high pressure, a high pressure line that transports the fluid, a device where the high pressure fluid can do work.
Or you could say leak, you know, a device that leaks the pressure. So you can either do work or you could just leak it, like a resistor. You could just dissipate it as heat, waste. But yes, you're always just reducing the pressure. And see how else to say that. And, you know, what the amperage is going to be decided by what your source is capable of producing and what your system is capable of carrying.
And a low pressure line that allows the fluid to return to the pump. And indeed, it is because of these similarities that the hydraulic analogy is usually used to teach students about electricity.
So this would have to be understood as being a closed system in the sense that the pipe isn't sucking air, it's just sucking fluid. So this one is pulling the fluid because the exterior pressure is higher than the interior pressure of the motor, which means the fluid has to go that way because it's going to be pushed by the atmospheric pressure into the pipe, so to speak. So if it was a bucket, that would be a better analogy, maybe, so you can understand how the circuit is complete. And there's no, air bubbles aren't going to get in the way.
Which raises the question, if the hydraulic analogy is an effective metaphor, why did Derek instead decide to use an explanation involving pointing vectors?
Right, because he's really just trying to say it's induction, and it's not. It's induction is just a symptom, and it's a tiny, 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 tiny effect versus the bulk of the electricity that'll definitely go through the wire. The changes that go through the wire are necessary to do any hard work. You can do a little tiny bit of work with the inductive effect, but it's tiny, and it doesn't last. It happens in a millisecond, and that's all you got. That's all the energy you're getting is a little blip. The LED goes blip. That's it. It doesn't stay on if all I'm relying on is induction.
From what I can tell, there were 3 points...
And DC current.
It's about electricity that Derek was trying to make with his lesson on pointing vectors. The first point was that electrons in a circuit don't move very fast. As we've already learned, electrons in a circuit like this will only move...
So I'd still say they move plenty fast, they just don't move much of a distance. So you can say they're going fast, okay, but they're not going the speed of light, but maybe they're going 20% of the speed of light. And they're not moving much distance is the key part. They're not really moving very far. The electrons aren't jumping between the atoms. They don't need to jump between the atoms to cause the effect of changing the shape of the atoms, and changing the shape of the atoms is what's polarizing the atoms, which is creating the magnetic effect. So you're polarizing the atoms by essentially changing their shape. Increasing the pressure between the electrons temporarily changes the shape of the atoms because all the electrons get further apart until they can get rid of that pressure, share it with the neighbors. So if 9 volts are here, then there'll be 8 volts will be the share between this one and this one. This one, say it's 7, this one's at 9. The two of them will share and they'll both become 7s. But now this one is still a 9 coming this way, so it's going to become a shared 8. And then this will be an 8 and this will be a 7, and they'll split the difference, become 7.5. The pressure gets shared as it goes through the process. And that changes the shape of the atom, which changes whether it's pointing plus or pointing minus. Yeah, whether it looks plus or minus. Again, the closer the electron is to you, the more the atom looks negative. The further away the electron is, that is, the closer it is to the proton, the more it looks positive. And that's what you're turning on and off all the time by moving electrons through a wire. You're constantly changing the way the atom looks because the electron does this and then the electron does this. Yeah, that was good enough. All right, continuing.
At a rate of about 1 millimeter per hour. This means that when this circuit is turned on, electron A will enter the wire from the battery, but electron B will be the one going into the resistor and generating heat.
So again, they had them moving at the same speed, and obviously this information about having to move went at the speed of light. So very fast, as this one moves, this electron moves. Because you're just sending the message. You're sending the pressure. So all that's getting sent isn't an electron traveling through the circuit. All that's getting sent is pressure. And the pressure essentially moves at the speed of light.
This leads to Derek's second point, which is meant to refute a common misconception about electricity. As Derek himself states,
these are the lies you were taught about electricity.
So he's using the metaphor of a chain going back and forth and something being able to roll on the chain. Different ways of understanding the electron's motion. But to me, those are very good analogies for the difference between a DC current and an AC current. So they have some value. Now, to me, a real model would explain that as you're increasing the pressure in this direction, you're also increasing the pressure in these other directions, and that's what's creating the field effects, is you are essentially, by shoving more an electron in, you're expanding everything's distance to accommodate the extra pressure. The electrons are flashing that way and coming back. They're pushing out and moving back in, and pushing out and moving back in.
The electrons themselves to the have atoms. Potential energy.
To expand on this misconception, people think of electrons as tiny batteries, which are pumped full of energy.
I don't know why they think of them as batteries, because they don't have any poles. Okay, they're monopoles. They're completely negative, and they're positive. You know, the proton is completely positive. There's no negative pole on the proton, and there's no positive pole on the electron. So why the hell would they think of them as batteries? I don't understand that one at all. I never even had a vision of it being possible. The electron was always the blue thing, and the proton was always a red thing. It was always separate and completely distinct, and the blue thing didn't have any red pieces on it, and the red thing doesn't have any blue pieces on it.
One end of the circuit, and are then transported to a resistor where their energy is released. But as we have already learned, particles don't store energy. Electric fields do.
Right. Fields do. Okay. The energy in the universe does. So gravity stores, lots of things store. So all of the fields, all of the invisible stuff that we would call a force moving the speed of light, light itself is force, and it can be stored.
So when a battery pumps an electron from the positive wire into the negative wire, it strengthens the electric field around both wires, increasing the potential energy stored.
So this is just talk about some magical electrical field produced by some magical effect, but there's no explanation from where it comes from. It comes from the universe. The universe is reflecting off the wire all the time, and when you change the position of the wire, you're changing the position of the atoms, you're moving the electrons to new positions, you're changing what the wire reflects to the world. So you're sort of making the wire a mirror and then a black void. You know, you're changing the color from white to black. So one minute it's absorbing energy from the universe, that is, it's reflecting nothing, and the next minute it's reflecting twice as much, so to speak. Twice as much as nothing would be nothing, so that's not exactly a great statement. But anyway, it's reflecting. And then it's not reflecting, and then it's reflecting, and then it's not reflecting. And that's the change you made to the field. You didn't make the field, you just changed the field. The ping pong balls are already hitting you. All you're doing is changing when they bounce off of you. I can make them bounce off of me here, which means it takes longer. Or I can make them bounce off of me here. Okay, that means they reflected sooner and they get someplace sooner. And that makes the difference.
In the two fields. And when a different electron leaves the negative wire, it removes potential energy from the electric fields and converts it into thermal energy inside the resistor.
So that's just talk. It doesn't really have any physical dynamics. These are just wooey lines. It doesn't say anything about where it came from, where's the energy, where's it going, how's it going, how's it get there. You know, it doesn't say anything. So I just say, eh.
So, to the extent that it makes sense to discuss energy flowing from the battery to the resistor,
it makes sense to talk about pressure, and pressure is weight, and weight is momentum, okay? And weight is force. It's all one thing. All there is force, weight, pressure, mass, you know, velocity.
Conclude that the energy is
no velocity squared.
Flowing through the electric fields, since, after all, that is where the energy is being stored. The electrons are only used to add or remove energy from the fields.
So I see even that. Obviously, they're essential to increasing or decreasing the pressure. You put more in. There's more more obstacles for the force to hit, more things for it to hit. It hits more stuff. It gets to more stuff more quickly. It has more interactions. So the more stuff you put in the field, the more interactions you inevitably have, which means you have more energy, because with each interaction, there's an exchange of momentum.
If you want, you can think of it like a bank. Let's say you deposit a $100 bill in a Los Angeles bank.
Right, so that's momentum. Momentum is currency. And so all you have is a certain amount of momentum, and you can give it away. And that's it. But you can't give away, you can't make anything that's going to make extra momentum. Unless you're Professor Lewin, then you can make free momentum, which is idiotic.
A short time later, you fly to New York City and withdraw a $100 bill from a bank there. The bank didn't ship that $100 bill from LA to NYC. Instead, when you deposited cash in the LA bank, it increased your digital...
So this is the same argument he was making before with the turtle and the rabbit. That the substance of the transaction isn't how fast your hand puts it across the bank's counter. Okay, that's a slow speed. But the bulk of the transfer happened electronically at the speed of light. And that's how your dollar got pushed into the hand of somebody else at the other end of the bank. Okay, and him, the little tiny motion of him picking the money up and putting it in his pocket, it's a little tiny motion versus the most of the communication which took place at the speed of light.
Digital wealth inside their computer. Then later, the New York bank tapped into that digital wealth before giving you a different $100 bill. The only purpose of the paper money...
So it's just an electron. A different electron pushes at the other end. But it's the same exact activity. The same exact motion takes place. Because it's the same pressure traveling through the whole system.
It's to provide a way for you to add or remove wealth from the bank's computer. Just like how electrons add or remove energy from electric fields. And in the same way that the bank's computer...
So they compress fields. So adding electrons compresses, makes the field, the space, smaller. Therefore, the interaction's higher. And if you make the space bigger, then you make fewer interactions.
Transfers wealth between the different branches of the bank. The electric field transports energy to different branches of the circuit. Lastly, Derek used the Poynting vector description as a way to explain alternating current. Now, alternating current...
Which doesn't make any sense to the whole story, because the whole story is about a DC current, and obviously that inductive effect is so slight and small, and in duration a little tiny millisecond worth of potential transferred information. Yeah.
It's pretty simple. When a system uses AC, it just means that the direction of the current flips back and forth around 50 to 60 times a second. Of course, if you slept through a lot of your 7 a.m. college physics lectures, then there are ways alternating current could seem counterintuitive. For example, when the system starts out, electrons flow from the bottom wire to the top wire, releasing thermal energy along the way. But when the current flips a few seconds later, the same electrons then come back through the resistor. Does this mean that they extract the same thermal energy that they had just deposited?
Well, obviously, it's a different thermal energy because they're moving in a different direction, being pushed by a different electron pressure in a different wire. So the force is moving into one, the pressure of the water, and the pressure is changed to the other way, and then it's changed this way. So the fluid argument, the fluid analogy explains alternating current just fine. Derek's example of the chain moving through the pipe is a perfect analogy in the sense that it's good enough to get the idea of the difference between direct and alternating. You can do just as much, you can cause just as much motion in the universe by going back and forth as you can going in a direction. It's still motion. It's the same amount of motion. I can do this. Or I can move 10 miles going that way. I can move 10 miles an hour this way, going just banging back and forth. Or I can go in a direction. It's the same energy.
And if electrons just wiggle back and forth, then how does energy travel from the battery to the resistor? The key to AC is that the voltage direction flips at the same time as the current direction. Therefore, no matter the current direction, electrons are always...
Oh, it's just silly to have the current direction opposite the voltage direction. They're both moving in the same direction, so that's just an artifact of a poor labeling of plus and minus. If you have minus, if you acknowledge that the electrons are the positive element and that adding them, okay, creates more pressure, then the current doesn't go in the opposite direction.
Escaping an area of high electron density for an area of low electron density, meaning that electrons are releasing thermal energy into the resistor during both halves of the cycle. Basically, if this picture makes sense...
They're not really releasing it, they're creating it. So, I don't, you know, that's a tricky concept, right? They're doing the work and of hitting obstacles and leaking out and having the atoms disrupt. The disruption of the atoms is the heat, and the electrons are causing that.
To you, and this picture makes sense to you, then you know enough to understand AC power systems. So, there you go. Derek's three main points.
So what this is really missing is, so in this, we're already 21 minutes, and he hasn't said, I don't think, the word induction. And the entirety of Derek's argument was, is that it's all induction. That it, all you need to do is induce, you know, by creating electricity here, I'm inducing a field. The field creates electricity in the other wire. Now the catch is, the obvious catch is that's a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the energy that's moving through the wire, and it doesn't use any of the energy that's moving through the wire because you're just really changing a field that already exists, and you're just changing how it reflects. You're not using energy to change that field. I use energy to move. The movement didn't use energy to change the electromagnetic field I'm producing. That's for free. Yeah, essentially.
Points were A, that electrons move slowly through a circuit, B, that energy is transported in the field around the wire instead of through the electrons in the wire.
So that's nonsense too. The outside just happens because that's where it's the freest to move pressure. Pressure migrates to the outside because the outside can expand, the inside can't. So that's where it migrates, but it doesn't have, it's not traveling only through the outside of the wire. But anyway, I think he gets to that.
And C, that alternating current doesn't rely on black magic. And as we have seen, with a proper understanding of electric circuits, those three points are pretty easy to understand.
All right, but really, that's not his video, okay? That's not what Veritasium's claim is. His claim is that all of the electricity that is conveyed through a process of induction, when clearly that's not what's happening inside the wire. The wire inside the wire is not doing induction. It's not, yes, it's reflections and it's moving electrons, but you wouldn't call it induction because the electrons are not separate conductors.
Now at this point, I bet a lot of you are thinking, so if the traditional explanation can adequately describe circuits, as well as explaining Derek's three main points, then how does the pointing vector...
Okay, so you say it's adequate. I'd say it's far short of a physical explanation that really gets to where the fields come from, what they're made out of, why they exist, how they exist, and nothing. It doesn't explain any of it. It just says there's a magical field, and it doesn't really explain what it's made out of. And again, you have to, I think you really have to understand how there's a subtle nuance that there's two fields and one field is inert to electrons and the other one's inert to protons. And it's the manipulation of those two fields and the, which what field you're, like I said, what field you're excreting that makes it understandable why there's attraction and repulsion in the same mechanism, how the same mechanism can create both effects. It's simple. It's only 2 plus 2 plus 2 physics. Two kinds of force, two kinds of matter, two kinds of interaction. But it's nuanced.
Yes. Are the two explanations at odds with each other, or are they compatible?
All right, well, there's nothing compatible. I mean, obviously, one theory is clearly saying the electrons got to move through the wire in the sense that the pressure's got to move all the way through the wire before you can do real work. You're not going to do any real work until it moves through the wire. You can do a little bit of fake work, a little tiny bit, through induction because the wire changed and it's changing the other wire, but it's changing it only a tiny, tiny, tiny bit.
Answer that question. Let's see how pointing derived his vectors in the first place. The derivation behind the pointing vector is rather complex, but it uses as its starting point three equations. The first equation is Faraday's law of induction, but in the circuits that we will be looking at, meaning circuits without any inductors or transformers, the change in the magnetic field should be negligible, meaning we can ignore Faraday's law. The other two equations...
So he just said the change in the magnetic field is negligible, but I would argue that it is the magnetic field is the only field there is. So, whatever. So I don't know how valuable this part is. I might skip over the pointing vector crap and just get back to the induction part if he ever gets to that. But that's what really this all this is. Veritasium's just explaining how antennas work. And not much more. And he's claiming that everything's an antenna when everything isn't. Something like that. It's all very deceptive, in my opinion. So, and it remains deceptive. He didn't clarify anything, in my opinion. He clarified nothing. busy still essentially arguing that somehow it is this field, okay, that's propelling, that's transmitting the power, and the only field that's transmitting the power is the field between the electrons, not the electrons and the external world. All right, I think that's enough of a declarative statement. I hope that's what it was. All right, so we're almost at an hour, so we will, almost exactly. Look at that. Boom. We'll call it a video. So, part three, maybe not a part four. We'll see how it goes. Just skip pointing vectors. But anyway, this has been a draftphysics.com video presentation. Till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. I mean, pointing vectors are just a byproduct of the fact of how you define plus and minus. Again, it's obvious that, yes, the electricity moves in this direction. It creates a field, okay, that has an orientation. Okay, so it's clockwise versus counterclockwise. But nothing actually moves clockwise or counterclockwise. But anyway, I'll probably have to go through that, even though I really don't want to.